Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. You're listening to America This Week with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. So we were talking about how basically college students are often labeled in this sort of millennial generation label. And they sometimes that generation is described as selfish or, you know, overly sensitive or too sheltered by their helicopter parents and concerned with small aggressions or trigger warnings. And but I think the individual people that are involved in that get lost sometimes, that who this group of people are and what are they like in your experience on a day to day basis when people are not trying to just slap one label on an entire group.
All right. Now I can answer that rather than what do you think? you know, what you just said in lead up to the question is, I think, my experience. The millennials are a generation. Yes. They have certain things in common, to be sure. Certain fashions that they like, absolutely. Certain music, no. To be honest, they dance to the music of my generation. They bop along campus to rap, and they have other favorite forms of music. But they dance to the music of the 60s and 70s, which I find both flattering and bewildering, frankly. But they are they have certain common traits, yes. The millennials, because of the way they've been brought up, both in their homes, their families, and in schools, they really are generous of heart. They are service-oriented. They are alert to issues of justice in a way that I haven't seen since the late 60s when my generation was marching, literally. But they're very different. You know, last night we served midnight breakfast. We had midnight breakfast here at Rose Hill. Tonight we have it at Lincoln Center. Last night we served 2,300 students. And very different groups came through, and very distinct personalities as groups and as individuals. We have kids who are, while they share the generosity of heart of their age and their generation, they choose to channel their generosity of heart in a wide range of interests, or into a wide range of interests. We have kids who are completely cut off from politics. We have kids who live for politics. We have the sons and daughters of immigrants who are very focused on careers, so much so that, you know, they start working outside jobs when they're sophomores, and by the time they graduate, they have full-time employment at the very firms that hired them as sophomores. And they go through with very, very clear career path planned out for themselves. And then we have dreamers. So are they all alert to microaggressions? No. Some are. Are they all? I think they have a greater sense of what's going on in the world of justice and injustice, but whether they see it as microaggression or other things, they really split on that. One of the interesting things about them is and they will tell you this, and Matt, you know this, you write about this, and you've made America one of the, I would say, the premier places where forums are held on this. They would say that they are spiritual but not religious.
Right.
And that, of course, opens up a whole other area where there's a variety of expressions of religion and religious fervor and religious commitment. And so, you know, I speak with the Jesuits here, and we all agree that this is, depending upon how you were trained when you were a younger Jesuit, this is the Areopagus or the Areopagus moment.
Right.
We have students who are hungry for God, but they don't know who God is. So it's like Paul, you know, this is, you know, you have an altar to the unknown God. This is whom you are searching for. And I think that's, we're very much in a moment like that.
So in a certain way, it's, if, to if we think of it in terms of that analogy, then our Catholic colleges and universities are, in a way, kind of missionary territory, certainly intellectually or spiritually, for the new evangelization. Would you agree with that?
Matt, I could not agree with you more.
Yeah.
And I say this with fair regularity. The United States is, once again, back before 1908, we are a mission country with all the exciting and bewildering and exhausting challenges that entails. But yes, it's mission country. And you've made America a place which takes seriously the fact that the United States and most of the West is a mission territory now.
Right.
And you're seeking the language.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And thank you for commenting on that. It's because one of the things that I realized when I came to America was that, younger folks, the emerging audience for America, if you want to put it in those terms, they don't truck in the same categories as even my generation, right? So they can be spiritual and not religious. They could be political but not partisan. In an ecclesial context, you have a large number of them are perfectly comfortable with civil marriage for same-sex couples, and they're very committed to faith and justice, but they like Eucharistic adoration, and they like a high mass, and they have a high Christology, and so they
and they're nuns,
right?
Nones,
exactly, right? And they're nuns, and so there is a deep searching going on, right? And that's the sign of a missionary space.
Yes, it is a sign, and I also say in conversations with Jesuits and province congregations and things like that. We have to now, I think, as Jesuits, and you do it in America, we have to accept and embrace the mission, the missionary nature of the context in which we are called to be apostles. And we also, I think, have to embrace the particular gift that God, I think, has given to the Society of Jesus from the very beginning, and that is the gift for enculturation. But then if we say, yes, we're going to accept that challenge, we're accepting the greatest challenge of all, we're incorporating into our own culture, which is the most difficult enculturation of all. How are you going to enculturate, speak the language, and not be co-opted? I think that's the work that we have in this missionary moment. Because
right.
We don't have the luxury of being missionaries and enculturating into a place where, there's obvious difference. And we have to search for a language, and we're going to have to enculturate the faith into the culture that we were brought up in, without losing what the faith is.
For a generation that does tend to be spiritual but not religious, what have you seen as sort of things that have drawn people sort of from that spiritual side to the more religious side at Fordham? I'm sure students have grown in their faith, whatever that faith might be, in this context of Jesuit spirituality and education. I wonder, what are the things that people are drawn to if they do tend to want to learn more about their Catholic side of their faith?
Well, there are certain things which are, they're general and generally accepted and generally, successful. Things like, if you meet them on their turf, I'm thinking things like theology on tap, and everybody in America has done this. They've done it here.
Sure.
You meet them literally on their own turf, and you engage them in conversation. And they're surprised and delighted, caught off a little off guard by the fact that you're on their turf, and you're hoisting a glass with them, and you're not judging them, and therefore you open a door. So something like that, or just hanging out with them, We used to joke about the fact that you're loitering with intent, and that's part of what the collegiate ministry is all about. You're just present to them, loitering with intent. But then there are things, honestly, that are very structured and that capture them through the desires of their own great hearts. The Jesuit thrust in higher education and, in everything that we do, if we are in the service of the faith that does justice, we're capturing them and inviting them into a work of service. They're really hardwired for service from the time that they're very young. But frequently they don't have a theological or a religious component or reflection when they're doing it. They're just doing it because it's a feel-good thing or because the society around them says this is. So you're in with them, and then you begin the conversation. Well, why are we doing this? So theological reflection on the act of justice, or the service of justice, leads them into a deeper conversation. And you discover that service, you know, can flow both ways. It can be the faith that gives rise to a birth to service, or it can be service that leads irresistibly into an encounter with the Lord who calls us all to service. So sometimes it's in that. Sometimes it's strangely or wonderfully, you know, they kind of wander in and discover the sacraments.
Right.
And we know this, Matt, that, you know, limit situations are God's invitations to everybody to rediscover Him as a merciful Father, as the Pope would say. So wonderfully and strangely, confessional practice is pretty lively here.
Right. Right.
Students come up against limits in relationships, limits in their own success stories, or they're striving for success, and they come in, you know, to the sacrament of reconciliation for conversation and end up with an encounter with God. And then, honestly, you can run into them on the way into church, and they're being first dragged by a friend or coaxed by a friend or invited by a friend. So the network of friendship also is a way in which they are brought in. So you take the human and you build on the human. Grace, you know, builds on nature. It doesn't change it. So you deal, and I think God does this beautifully. You deal with the natural situation and they come in. I don't know if that's helpful.
It is. And it seems to me that encountering that limit, while I'm sure it can be very painful, quite challenging, there's also something that's ultimately... I think back to when I was in college, there's something that's almost kind of freeing about it, because there's something very terrifying and overwhelming about seeing your horizon as limitless.
Yeah.
Right. And having all, particularly if you're a student at a place like Fordham University in the heart of New York City, a great university in a great city, the world is your oyster in many ways, right? And you have so many choices in front of you. But that can be, you know, going back to Augustine, right? Is freedom, does it come to us from, you know, having multiple choices, or does it really come from having chosen from a place of the heart? Right?
Yes, and this all, of course, Matt, goes back to, you know, one of the things that we really desire with all our heart at Fordham and in any Jesuit institution anywhere in the world. We want to make sure that in the course of their lives, students are taught the art of discernment, so right. they can answer the question that you just posed, and then discover it. To go back to another expression you used, you know, the world is your oyster. We also want them to discover, as Ignatius did, that the world is their cloister, that they can find God in everything and in any pursuit that they have, and you know that is a great liberation for them.
Sure.
We also need, you know, we also have to direct them back to the parishes.
Yeah,
right. And I think all of these things are things that can counter some of those criticisms of this generation in general, and kind of build up that that sense of independence in a way, and in that sense of men and women for others, as Jesuits discuss, in a really, really powerful way, and build up that, I think, that grit and resilience that is often that the generation is often criticized for lacking.
Right. Now, I'm going to, push us just to another encounter that they are having, which is both consoling and challenging, perplexing and affirming, is the encounter that they're having with Francis.
Yeah.
Pope Francis is someone who, he's 79 years old, but I haven't met a student between the ages of, 16 and 30 who hasn't fallen completely under his spell.
Right.
And on this one, Matt, I'll share with you some things, but I want to hear what you have to say on this one, because our students are fascinated by this man who is so deeply rooted in God and represents the church, but is a free agent of grace,
right,
raising questions, challenging political systems, economic systems, and systems of sin, and they are systems of sin, and also challenging the church in its assumptions about its own worthiness, holiness, adequacy, and mission. They are fascinated by him. They're consoled by him. They laugh with him. Do you find the same, and by the way, the same is true here among the intellectuals.
Right.
They find him fascinating. What's your reaction? Do you find this in your encounters?
Yes. No, absolutely. And I think particularly with young people, you know, it, of course, you know, when you're between the ages of 18 and 25 or whatever, of course, this is an important period of self-discovery and you know, kind of meeting the world and deciding what terms you're going to meet the world on. And but, you know, you're also, I think, in part, still looking for models of you know, what kind of human being do I want to be? And so authenticity is highly valued.
Yes.
Right. And this... this man, Francis, is authentic, right? Mm-hmm. And he walks the walk and he talks the talk. He doesn't just say, go to the margins. He goes to the margins, right? And he doesn't say just say, we need to ask tough questions. He asks tough questions. He doesn't say, we need to keep people accountable. He actually holds people accountable. And so and you can't fake that, right? And I think that they see in him this authenticity that is profoundly appealing. And, you know, because I think a lot of people say, well, you know, Francis kind of, you know, a blank screen and you can project anything you want onto it. And so we all kind of meet him where we are. But I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think most people understand that, you know, they don't feel the same way about everything the way that Francis does. But what I think that they see, particularly young people, is this authenticity, which, of course, is, I think, deeply appealing in the world in which we're living, in this kind of perfect storm of social media and celebrity and all the rest.
I agree. I'm going to add one thing to what you said. I think our students see authenticity. They also see consistency. He doesn't change from day to day.
Right.
There's an old line among people who have worked in gerontology for a long time. They say, when you get old, you don't change. You remain yourself, only more so.
Right.
And I think he is remaining himself, only more so. He hits the same notes with such consistency and such depth of conviction that I think his credibility grows.
Yeah.
From day to day. The other thing I find interesting and fascinating is even people who would say I'm spiritual but not religious are drawn to the person of Jesus through this man's testimony. And I'm not talking about the testimony of the spoken word. I'm talking about the second book that he's writing, which is the book of photographs and images, where he is, in a very real way, he is putting on display all of the works of mercy.
Right. And in that sense, he truly is the vicar of Christ.
Right.
But, yeah.
But, you know, when people say to me, he's not a theologian, I say, really? He's a theologian of image. I want you to try and forget that picture of him washing the feet of the 6-year-old African refugee or migrant who's sitting on his mother's lap and the mother is weeping uncontrollably in the background. I want you to tell me how you're going to erase that image and how you're going to forget that there's a haunting call to mercy in there. I think that's where his theological genius is being played out.
Indeed it is. So, Father Joe, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Thank you so much for calling in.
Pleasure, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, and congratulations on all of your fine work, and give our best wishes to the faculty, staff, and students at Fordham University.
I will indeed.
All right, Joe. Thanks
so
much.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sister Camille D'Arienzo. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.